Fascinating, fascinating. Good morning, Ellie. Welcome back, Ellie. Fascinating, Rashi. Quotes an unlikely source. We've spoken a lot. Today's Rashi. Every Wednesday, we learn some Rashis in the Parsha. So we talk about all of Rashi's sources. Where does he draw sources from? Rashi didn't have a Rebbe, a particular Rebbe. France in the 11th century wasn't exactly a hotbed of Torah. Rashi travels to Germany, learns by several Rebbeim, comes back and converts to himself and his grandchildren France into center of Torah for 200 years. 50 years. Okay, but here we have an interesting source that Rashi quotes. Torah describes after Dina is born, now it's getting pretty difficult for Rachel. Not only does her sister have six children, she actually has a girl. So she's really being outflanked. So Vayiskar Elokim is Rachel, Vayishma Eileh Elokim, Vayiftachas Rachma, and Yosef is born, and then of course the naming. Now, we never have any indication of Rachel davening. So, Jan daven, Vayiskar Elokim is Rachel. Where does she daven? And in fact, the lack of davening is actually very interesting and actually questionable. Rivka davens, Yitzchak davens, when Rachel doesn't have a child, she turns to Yaakov and complains, and Yaakov responds. There's an interesting give and take between them. How Avram solved his childbearing, how Yitzchak solved his childbearing, but no one davens. So what is Hashem remembering and answering Rachel? So Rashi quotes the Medrash that there are two zechuyos that Rachel had that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took into account. So there's no actual frontal tefillah, but there are two zechuyos. One of them seems obvious. What's the first act of heroism of Rachel in the Parsha according to Chazal?
Simanim,
transferring the codes to her sister Leah. She shouldn't be mortified under the chuppah, an act of selflessness. We'll get back to that in a few minutes. It's not just an act of selflessness, but it may be very central to the entire Sefer Bereishis. But what other zechus did she have? Interesting, you think that zechus would be enough, but there's another zechus. When she didn't have children, she realized that the big bad wolf was setting her sights on her. Who was the big bad wolf that was setting her sights? Well, maybe Rachel doesn't have children. Maybe she will no longer be married to Yaakov. Who's interested in getting back in the game by marrying Rachel? Esav. So at some point, whether Esav had expressed it or it was implied, Rachel was agonizing. I can't let Esav back in. I don't want to marry him. I don't want to be married to this man. It hurt her. It bothered her. And that bother was enough for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take it into account. That bother was sufficient. We'll talk about that bothering and agonizing in a moment, why it's sufficient, why it's... She was scared of Esav. I wouldn't want to be married to Esav. Why is that a schuss? There's no one to be married to Esav. But for a moment, let's talk about Rashi's source. Where does the Medrash get this from? What is Rashi? Rashi gets it from the Medrash, but Rashi proves and corroborates the Medrash from an unlikely source. This is a unique and singular Rashi in the entire Chumash. Doesn't quote Menachem ben Saruk, the grammarian. Doesn't quote Rav Moshe Darshan. Doesn't quote his Rebbe's. You know who he quotes? He quotes a Piyut. This is the only Rashi in the entire Torah that quotes a Piyut. We're far removed from the world of Piyutin because, first of all, we don't make up our own Piyutin. If you go back, certainly, 1,000 years, you got up, especially in Sephardic lands, you got up to Davin, you were expected to make a Piyut up on the spot. That's how conversant you were in Tanakh. It would be like saying, make up a poem in English, a simple little poem. And you could turn a couple of words and rhyme them. You'd have to insert some Tanakh Pesukim and derivations of Tanakh Pesukim. There are records from the Cairo Geniza of Mr. Soleimani telling his son Isaac, you didn't do this well this morning. You were the Shliach Tzibur and your piyut was flat. Your piyut wasn't good. You didn't make it good, number one. And second of all, even the institutionalized piyutim are very much curtailed to Slichos, Kinos, and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Especially Yom Kippur, we have that big piyut in the middle. But if you go back, I mean, my father told me he davened in a German shul, and anyone ever use those machzorim that have all the things you skip, machzor rabbah? Well, they would get up at 6 in the morning and read everything in the machzor. I don't know how much they understood, but they would read all the... We've pretty much scaled down what are called piyutim and yotzros and krevos, but you'd say them certainly every Shabbos, every important Shabbos, every Yom Tov. Davening was twice as long as it is for us. So we've fallen off of the piyut planet on two fronts. Number one, we don't really conjure up our own piyutim, although there are two people in Alon Shvut. There's a person in Alon Shvut, a professor in Bar Ilan, who is a professor of piyut. And he actually is studying piyut and trying to reintroduce some sensitivity to piyut into the public consciousness. And he will be, as well as another person in the yeshiva, Rabbi Bednar, who's a Rosh Hashiva in YU, they will come to a bris, and they'll hear the name of the baby. The name of the baby is Moshe, is it the middle name? Yeah. Moshe Yair. And then by the time benching comes, they'll make up their own harachaman. They're the standard harachamans for a bris and a siddur harachamoni. They'll make up their own harachaman that will sound like a real piyut, and they'll say it in the middle of benching, based on the name Moshe and Yair and Psukim in the Torah and based on. So Rashi quotes a piyut. Let's read the piyut. This is a really there are a couple of tosas in that quote piyutim. There's a famous Balamor Ramban, whether the Trumas Hadesh and cleaning the Mizbeach on Yom Kippur had to be performed only by the Kohen Gadol, like all the other avodas of Yom Kippur, or at any Kohen. So the Balamor quotes a piyut to prove his position. But listen to Rashi's piyut. Kelashon hu sheyiseh hapayet. This is based on the piyut. Again, Rachel's agonizing over the potential that Esav will marry her because she's childless. Ha'admon. Talk about that word in a moment. The tie-in to Kislev. You can start thinking, what's the tie-in to Kislev? But what's Admon? Admon is a reference to who? Who's the Admon? Esav, Admoni. Ha'admon. Kivat. Now, piyutim change Hebrew. They make Hebrew, they play games with Hebrew. Grammarians don't always like piyut because kivat is a shortened version of habet. Kihabet. But when you make a piyut, the meter and the rhyme and this and the pace has to be changed. So the hey is omitted. Kibat, when he looked. But doesn't mean look, but in piyut it means to look. Kibat, when the Admoni saw. Kihabet. Ha'admon kibat. Shelochala, that she didn't have children. Shelochala, she didn't have children. Tzava lakachtalo. He desired to take her. So Esav was already riling up, sending her emails, contacting J.D. Maybe I want to marry this woman because she has failed her husband. Venis Bahala. And she had all misbahal. She got all antsy and agonized, and she was thrown off her rocker, and she didn't like it, and she was agonizing, and Hashem wanted to avoid this for her. And the fact that she was agonizing about it is a schus. Not just that Hashem saved her, but he responded to the fact she was worried about this. So this is the only Rashi in the entire Torah that quotes a piyut to corroborate what he finds in the Medrash. Now, what's interesting about this for Chodesh Kislev is, what's the tie-in between the word Admon and Chodesh Kislev? Motzur. What's the last part of Motzur that was censured because it was too hostile against Christians, and now, thank God, we don't have to censure our singing, we re-sing it. What's that final stanza of Motzur? Motzur is a medieval piyut. What? Chasov zera kachecha, expose the hand of your arm of the holiness, namely your Yeshua. Chasov zera kachecha, the kariv ketz ha Yeshua, advance the Yeshua. And how does it end? Deche admon v'tzel tzalmon. Push admon. Admon is Esav, the hostile Christian countries during the medieval period. Deche admon. What is v'tzel tzalmon? What does it sound like? Tzalmon, tzel tzalmon, tzel tzalmon. Tzalmavas. Push them into death. Kill them. Kill the hostile Christians who were crusading in the medieval period. Deche admon betzel tzalmon. Now, you couldn't really say this for hundreds of years, so it was excised out, and now we recite it. It's a beautiful song. Chasav zerah, akad jecha. Famous song of Chasav zerah. So this is Rashi quoting a piyut that was written in the medieval period and calls Esav admon, the same way that whoever wrote Mosur also referred to Esav as Admon. It's hard to know. So just to be aware that you go back in time 800 years, just like our world is composed of Gemara and Tanakh and Midos and Halach, their world was, you had a chug in Pia. If you went to the yeshiva, the Rambaz yeshiva in Barcelona, there's a chug every day from 5:15 to 6:15 in Pia. And it wasn't just stylistic, how to make fancy poems, but these were deep piyutim embedded with midrashim and ideas. And it was a skill. We're trying to teach you this is not just knowledge, but to internalize it as part of your subsystem. And the different ways that you learn Torah and study Torah, for example, some people study Torah backwards. How does it help to read lines of Gemara backwards? Because you'll know it better. You'll know it differently. Or Gemara Baal Peh, or Gematria. These are just different ways to access the knowledge and convert in something internal. So when you create a poem about a medrash or a poem about a concept, so you remember the poem. It's more emotional than prose. It's not prose. So poems in piyutim were a very central part of people's lives, and Rashi's quoting the poem. Now, what's interesting about Rachel's heroism is that each of these activities are not just personal moral acts. They also factor into the overall saga of Bereishis. What's the overall saga of Bereishis? Choosing the Am HaNivchar, discarding the seed, the Esavs, the Yishmaels, who are not going to be... And Esav is still struggling to get back in. If Esav marries Rachel, that's his in. because Rachel has already been brought into the family fold. So this decision, whether Esav can marry Rachel, is not just a personal crisis. Oh my goodness, I'm going to marry a bigot. I'm going to marry an abusive husband. I'm going to marry a hunter. But Rachel doesn't want to marry Esav because that will reverse the process by which Esav was discarded and Yaakov was selected. So she doesn't want to allow. And the same thing when she delivers the signs to Leah. How is that advancing Bereishis? Why is that not just a personal act? Like if Eli says, Rabbi Tarragon, I don't like your haircut today. Can you cut your hair differently? So, okay, I'll accommodate you. But that won't factor into some historical saga. But delivering the signs to Leah, Leah's the fertile one. Maybe Rachel knows and maybe she doesn't. In order for the Shortim to be born, Leah has to, and Leah's not going to be loved as much as Yaakov. So her contribution will be children. Her contribution will be Shvatim. So Rachel delivering the signs to Leah is also, because if she didn't, then Yaakov would blow up the whole chuppah, run away from Lavan, elope with Rachel, and there'd be two Shvatim, if that much. So the delivery of the Simanim to Leah is a selfless act by Leah, by Rachel, getting out of her personal way, getting herself out of the way of the narrative of Bereishis that has to continue. The narrative of Bereishis, we need this Yaakov to be selected, Esav to be discarded, children to be born. She agonizes over Esav returning into that saga, and she delivers the signs to Leah to advance the process. Similar to what Leah senses. Leah, one more Rashi. Leah calls her son Reuven. So we all think, Reuven, look, I've got a son, even though I'm the despised wife, now all of a sudden Yaakov will pay more attention to me. She's happy. But Rashi says, why does Leah call her son Reuven? Look at my son. She's contrasting her firstborn with another firstborn who is more militant. My firstborn is willing to be selfless and abdicate his firstborn for the purpose, because Reuven abdicates to Yosef, and then ultimately to Yehuda. And not only does Reuven abdicate to Yosef willfully, even though Yosef makes no effort for it, but actually tries to save Yosef. He's the only person who's paying attention in Vayeshev trying to save Yosef. This is all in Rashi. And who is she contrasting? Look at my son as opposed to, you want to see the Rashi? Esav. Because Esav was the firstborn. He fights and he struggles, even though he willfully gave up his Bechor. And Reuven never willfully gave. It was taken from him, or the way circumstances evolved. Read to the language of Leah. So Leah says, what's the lashon of Rashi? Re'u ma bein bini leven chami. Look at the difference between my son and my son's uncle or my brother-in-law. Esav ben chami, the son of my father-in-law. Shemachar b'char liyakov. Esav abdicated willfully. V'zela machar liyosef. And Reuven never willfully delivered it to Yosef. V'lo ira alav. And yet Reuven accepted his fate. There's no combativeness. There's no conflict. Maybe Yehuda didn't, but certainly Reuven and Yosef have no conflict between them. V'lo ol shelo ira alav. Not only did he not battle El Shabikish Latziyam and Abor. So again, Leah is recognizing that for the Shvatim to move forward, for whatever reason, I don't have time to go into it now, Reuven can't be the Bechor. For some reason, Reuven isn't fit to be the Bechor, even though he's the legitimate firstborn genetically and biologically. And he abdicates so that Jewish history can move forward, said Yosef, and Leah is proud of that. So Rachel abdicates for Leah because Leah has the fertility to advance the process. Reuven abdicates to Yosef. Rachel doesn't want Esav to get back in. Rachel delivers a symbol. The Avos are aware that they're not just living personal lives, they're also living historical lives. And they have to consider all their decisions and their actions in the overall calculus of history. Will this promote history? Will this thwart history? And they're all struggling with their own personal needs. I'm a Bechor. I want to be the wife. I want to be married. I want to have children. But also the historical expectations in order to propel this process forward of choosing the Zera Nivchar. You see this in a lot of Rashi's conversation between Rachel and Yaakov, but certainly when she wants children, but certainly in these two or three Rashi's. Okay? Fascinating, fascinating. Piyut. Only time in Rashi and Alatara that he quotes a piyut. A lot of tosses in Ishas, a lot. Three or four tosses in Ishas that quote piyut. Okay? Good day, everyone. Tomorrow, back to...